If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, I've gotten many a message on social media wondering what happened to this podcast, and it didn't want to say what it was, but the truth was that John has been holding out this entire time in training camp, and finally, I convinced him to come back. I screamed at him. I tried to meet with him in person. He wouldn't meet with me in person. Tried calling. I tried texting. And finally, I went to his agent and I said, "It's in your fucking contract." And that convinced him. He finally agreed to show up here.
That's the real story. The authorities wouldn't let me podcast with Nate until I was vaccinated, and I was trying to be a voice for the voiceless, but.
Yeah, everyone who doesn't have a podcast, you try to
exactly them. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Who's speaking for them?
So I'll let you pick Simmons or Kyrie. Where are we starting?
Let's start with Kyrie. The description of him, I can't remember where I saw it, so apologies to the writer who got this, that somebody called him a contrarian without a cause, which was sort of his reputation in Cleveland and Boston, but I think has really been cemented by this whole episode in Brooklyn and even the recent leaks yesterday. Like, oh, I'm not anti-vax, I just, you know, haven't been vaccinated and can't play for my team. You know, it's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, so surely making the personal decision to not get vaccinated is entirely altruistic. That's what it's about. Honestly, if that's what he believed, then actually showing up and having that message every day in the media would be far more effective to spread your anti-vax bullshit than what he is doing. No, he just doesn't want to get vaccinated, and he came up with a ridiculous rationale to support that. But, and far be it for me to give any credence to, or I don't really care that much about why people don't want to get vaccinated. It's just stupid. But it is relevant here because we are trying to project what this team is going to look like and what circumstances might actually get him back.
Yeah, I mean, setting aside what people think about vaccination or whatever and going down that rabbit hole, what this means for the Nets and their season and their future. I mean, remember, we were talking about Kyrie and Harden both signing extensions this fall, like not that long ago. And surely they're not still talking about an extension with him, right? And doesn't seem like Harden's going to sign either now. Now, both players would be financially better off signing after the season. So I was always a little dubious whether those extensions would actually happen.
Because they could get 5 years instead of four. KD, like Steph Curry, would have been impacted by the over 38 rule and couldn't have gotten the 5 years after the season. So there is no reason for either of them to not just sign now.
Exactly. So now, you know, maybe they just end up signing with Brooklyn after the year and everything goes on being merry. But it is interesting now that it seems like both James Harden and Kyrie Irving could be free agents after the season. The other thing that does is, like you say, oh, we should just trade the guy, you know, and, you know, could you trade Kyrie Irving for Ben Simmons? The problem is Kyrie Irving is a free agent after the season. So even if you decided you were willing to deal with all his bullshit because he's so talented, you still have a serious flight risk. And again, from his perspective, an extend and trade, you know, might not be the thing to do when you can sign for the full five with whatever team you get traded to after the season, or you can, you know, say I've made enough money and I'm going to sign somewhere else for four, which he's already done once, right? He did that when he went from Boston to Brooklyn. So, you'd have to feel pretty secure that he was going to stay there to get involved with trading for him.
But not only that he's going to stay there, but that he's not going to just find some other reason to not show up, even if he is under contract.
He took some me time in the middle of last season, remember, too.
No, that's right. And regardless of the legitimacy of his feelings and whether there is, you know, whether it's simply, you know, feeling like he can't be out there, and it could be an anxiety thing. Who knows what it is? I don't think it's fair to speculate on that with him for a mental health perspective, at least, or maybe not speculate, but it's not fair to excoriate him. You know, there could have been legitimate issues, but regardless of whether the issues are legitimate or not, the reality is that if you're making a decision to acquire him, it impacts his potential availability. There is one other problem with the Kyrie Simmons trade, which we'll get to, I think, when we talk about Ben Simmons. But yeah, I don't know what's going to happen now. You know, Harden has kind of alluded to the idea that he wants to get the 5 years. You know, I imagine he's a pretty strong favorite to re-sign. But as we've seen, shit can go bad pretty badly. You know, Dwight Howard, I'm sure, was certain he was going to stay in Los Angeles when he first got traded there, and things,
or Houston,
things did not go that well. What's that?
Or Houston, right?
Yeah, that's true. But at that point, it didn't make financial sense for him to extend. And so he played it out and things changed. So let me ask you this. Is this, if you were, obviously you weren't at an ownership level, and obviously we weren't in a global pandemic at the time when you were a Memphis Grizzlies executive, but ultimately, if you were faced with this type of situation, is this how you would have handled it, the way that the Nets did?
Yeah, I think it's the only way you can handle it, rather than having a guy who's, and your alternative was just to have him kind of show up for road practices and road games.
Well, he would have been able to practice at home. I think when it was very clear to me when he couldn't practice at home that the whole situation would be untenable. This was a little, once he could practice and he just couldn't play in home games and games against the Knicks, then it became a little more plausible, at least, because he wouldn't have to be away from the team for like 20 days at a time or something like that.
Yeah, and it's, I think if you're Brooklyn, you have to look at the bigger picture probably, which is you still want to incentivize him to get the shot. You want to be able to play in the playoffs, right? Like, what are you going to tank to the 5 seed so you get 4 road games? Right? Yeah, no,
like, I can't remember who it was that I was talking to who joked about that the other day.
So I think this was the only way to do it, that you're all in or all out. But this is definitely the type of call that, you know, your owner is definitely going to be involved in something like this. And, you know, the owner might tell you, you know, I'll defer to your judgment, or the owner might have a really, really strong opinion on it. And it's a big enough deal that that's going to tip the scale for sure. So that's where this gets a little more interesting. You know, your coach is definitely going to have a strong say on it with something like this. So this isn't just the type of thing. This isn't, you know, like a signing somebody to a 10-day or whatever, where, you know, three people meet in a conference room in the front office and are like, oh, okay, that guy, you know. And this is a way bigger deal on a franchise level. And so it's a political dance as much as it is a strategic one. But I think the Nets ended up in the right place.
No, I would agree with you there. And they, of course, have been the team of player empowerment, maybe more than any team in NBA history. And there was much talk when Kyrie and KD came in of they have this great culture there and how is this going to affect things? And largely, they've just let them do whatever they wanted. And acquiring James Harden obviously just added to this being a player's franchise. There's even been reporting in that book about the Nets. I can't remember the author, which I apologize for, but that essentially they're doing all sorts of off the book stuff to like help out players' girlfriends and stuff of that nature. So it's definitely been very, and we've never talked about that, obviously. That didn't get as much attention, I think, as it probably should have, that report. But in any event, at some point, though, it's gone too far. Kyrie has gone too far. And I think you make a great point that I haven't necessarily heard elsewhere, that this is the right decision for them in terms of basketball, in addition to morally, in addition to having Kyrie Irving around the team when he's unvaccinated. Yes, he'd be tested pretty severely, so I maybe that risk is a little overblown. But just in terms of adhering to the rule and building a team and all that, it's sort of the moral aspects. It makes more sense on the court too, because you're probably having him only play road games in the playoffs is ridiculous. You're not giving yourself the best chance to win. What gives you the best chance to win is put the hammer down and get him to come back and be vaccinated by the playoffs. This is your best chance of doing that. If you just let him play the road games, I don't know. Maybe he would just like being in it and that his teammates needing him and getting a chance to work on him all year. Maybe that would have worked better. I don't know. But I think I agree with you that this is the way to do it.
Yeah, I think you would end up with some clunky chemistry bringing him in, taking him out. Because, I mean, incorporating a higher usage player is harder. It's not like, oh, hey, Danny Green can only play in the road games. You know, well, okay, he's going to stand in the corner for 40 road games, right? Like, this is a guy who's playing with the ball in his hands, and you're kind of running a lot of stuff through him. So it is more complicated doing that. And then I think the other thing from the Nets' perspective, with Durant and Harden, they'll still win enough games to get one of the top three seeds, which is really all they're shooting for in the regular season.
So, of course, I'm going to have to ask you this here, and we won't hold you to this, but hey, this is what we do. We project teams for a living, and now, well, thankfully not entirely for a living, because we don't actually have to bet our money, but people apparently want to listen to what we have to say to some extent. So now we have to figure out how likely it is that he actually shows up, that he changes. What is your prediction for how this resolves?
I think the most Kyrie Irving way for this to be resolved is for him to announce that actually he got vaccinated 6 months ago.
That's been pointed out to me. I don't think that's
actually true. No, I don't think that's true either. But he values being an iconoclast so much that I do wonder if he's just gonna not do it. If he's just gonna say, I enjoy the attention I'm getting for being different, and I'm just gonna keep doing this.
Although he being completely out of the spot, supposedly, like, he hates the media and all the obligations and stuff, but I do think he enjoys being viewed as like this different pseudo intellectual type of guy. So, I do think there is like an attention wanting aspect to it, even though he'd rather not face questions from the media. Yeah. So maybe he'll realize that he's out of sight, out of mind. But to me, I think some sort of narrative has to be crafted, at least in his own head, about like something has changed. He's proved some point, and now he can come back. Like he can't just come back with his tail between his legs and say, "Hey, I got vaccinated."
You know, it's interesting. That article yesterday by my colleague Shams Charania is that he left himself just enough window, to decide to come back, because he didn't say he was stridently anti-vax. So I thought that was really interesting that he left that door open.
Yeah. So he missed his 20 games. All right, I drew attention to this incredibly important social issue, and now I'm back.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's definitely in play.
Yeah. But my guess would be, though, that he is really just scared of getting the shot, and he doesn't want to say that, and he doesn't want to, he feels like that would be bad for his brand. I honestly have much more sympathy for Andrew Wiggins, who at least like his hesitancy was based on having had allergic reactions previously, and that isn't necessarily mean that he's going to have an allergic reaction to this shot, and by all accounts he turned out just fine, and many of his health concerns were incorrect, but at least he was basing it on legitimate health concerns. Like, if this is what Kyrie is truly basing it on, I find that far more loathsome than someone who is legitimately worried for their health, even if they are incorrectly worried about their health. So Danny asked me, or I asked Danny yesterday, we do a segment on our pod called WATFO, What Are the Fucking Odds? Mm-hmm. And we try to just make predictions. And so I said, the question that we put up there is, what are the odds that Kyrie Irving plays in a home game this season or playoffs while the vaccine requirement is in effect? Danny said 66%. I said 45%. You want to weigh in?
I would take Danny's side, and I might even go a little higher. I think I'd say 70 to 75.
Yeah.
It really stood out to me that he left himself that out in the article yesterday. So I can easily see him relenting at some point.
Oh, it is that time again. Wedding season. Indochino's custom suits will have you walking into a wedding looking like $1 million, feeling like $1 million because their suits are custom made to fit you perfectly. You can get a tailored fit from the comfort of your home. You can set up your measurement profile on Indochino's website, choose customizations without even leaving the house. Indochino was the official outfitter of my wedding. I got a tux from them. All my groomsmen got custom fitted sport jackets, and I'd like to think we all look great. Order your custom suit now. Be ready for wedding season, whether it's at home or in person at a showroom New Year, which I actually recommend. That's what I did. An Indochino style guide can walk you through all of the amazing customizations that they have. The lapels, the lining, single-breasted, double-breasted. You can feel the fabrics in person. That's definitely the best way to do it, in my opinion. But you can also do it from home as well. Look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use the code PER. Easy to remember PER because that's the metric that John invented. Use the code PER to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, I-N-D-O-C-H-I-N-O, Indochino.com. And don't forget that PER code to let them know you came from us. As a sports fan, you know that when you get into the last seconds of the game, you've got an amazing chance to win, to make all your hard work pay off. All you have to do is convert at the very end, and your favorite player misses the last shot, swings and misses at that high fastball just out of the zone. So if it's that bad in sports, imagine how bad it is if your business's commerce platform keeps whiffing on golden opportunities. You're putting in all this work only to have it squandered because you can't actually convert, because your commerce platform is not keeping up. Instead, get the MVP you deserve. Get Shopify. They are revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. If you're a garage entrepreneur, IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. If you're selling signed sneakers from Shopify's in-person POS system or offering official outfielders outfits on Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform, you are covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify is the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. It's no wonder that Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is possibility powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/PER, all lowercase, easy to remember because John invented it. That's shopify.com/PER to take your business to the next level today. Shopify.com/PER, all lowercase. Don't forget that /PR URL to let them know you came from us. So what does this mean for our projection for the Brooklyn Nets this season? Later on, we're going to talk about some of our preseason projection disagreements, but what are these guys without Kyrie Irving?
I think they're still really good. It definitely hurts not having him because their roster is a little top heavy, but they have so much perimeter talent even without him. Like you're sliding in Patty Mills, who's still pretty good in an off-ball role. You have James Harden basically running the point for you. So I like playing without Durant, I think, would impact them much more than playing without Irving. They do maybe get into a little bit of depth issues in the backcourt. Where it can really hurt them is Harden and Durant the last 2 years have not been the most durable players. If one of those guys also goes down and now you're out there playing with just one star, then I think they're a lot more vulnerable for those games.
Yeah, I agree. So let's say Kyrie Irving doesn't play a game this season. Are they still the most likely team to win the NBA championship to you?
I would probably say no at that point.
I think
they need all three of those guys to beat this year's version of the Bucks. And I say that I know they only had about 1.4 of those three during the series last year, but I still think that, like, I think Milwaukee's maybe a better version of the team that they played a year ago, that they evolved as those playoffs went on, and I think some of the things with their roster now make them maybe a little more dangerous. And Brooklyn, once you get past that first line of players, I mean, they have good depth as far as like getting through a regular season, but as far as guys you want on the court in a playoff series, it's Joe Harris and that's about it, right?
I think they'll be able to cobble guys together in the front court as well. Patty Mills, I think, is a guy who can be effective. Like, defensively, I wonder about him a little bit, but, you know, is he any worse than Irving is? I guess totally locked in, Irving has a little bit more size, but, you know, Mills makes makes it a little bit more difficult to switch. They do. I think they have outs in the front court, even if there's nobody who's like amazing. I think their defense overall could be better in the regular season without Irving. That's something that might help. And but yeah, I mean, obviously making them overwhelming favorites was based on those ridiculous offensive results that we saw when all three of these guys were together, which apparently the universe is not too interested in seeing Kyrie Irving, yeah. Kevin Durant, and James Harden play exactly. here. They gave us just enough to tantalize in the Celtics series, and that's it. Yeah, I would have to think about it. The Nets are going to be one of our big disagreements to tease that. Or I'm sorry, the Bucks are going to be one of our big disagreements to tease that for later. So maybe we can save that. But yeah, they still seem like a top two team in the East to me. But of course, it's just being able to withstand injuries that's the big problem. All right, let's talk about Ben Simmons here. And I think where we can start, this is somewhat of an aside, but it's also just, of course, he is that it would appear based on the fact that Simmons has to go through basically 5 days of testing and progressive protocols to rejoin the team, whereas most players, about 96% if the Players Association now is to be believed, could just get one test and rejoin the team immediately because they are vaccinated. That would indicate to me that Ben Simmons is not vaccinated, so that throws yet another wrench into this for the process as well.
It also throws another wrench into the hoped for Ben Simmons for Kyrie trade.
Yes, if there was any hope of that happening,
this information kind of is the death knell for that.
So do you want to just give me your latest thoughts on this whole thing with him being back? I've got a few points here, but you haven't really talked about this too much, I don't think, because you've been doing most of the preview stuff. So has I. So what do you got on this?
So, I mean, I thought that they handled it wrong from the get-go because a holdout was
never going to... They being Simmons' side?
The Simmons' side, because a holdout was just never going to put any pressure on the Sixers. Like, it just wasn't a threatening thing. All it did was cost him money. Unfortunately, apologize to, you know, my fellow league executives for suggesting this, but like I tweeted the other day, showing up and being an asshole is a much more effective way to get yourself out of a place, and they still have to pay you, or they'll pay you to stay away until they trade you. So I thought they misplayed their hand there. I do think Philadelphia needs to trade him. The problem is that I think the demand side of the equation, like there are teams interested in him and willing to put stuff on the table for him, but Philadelphia is a win now team. And so they need to trade him for another win now piece. And that guy isn't available. And so I think that's what makes it hard for Philadelphia. And really, the question is now, are you willing to go past the trade deadline or not? Because if the situation with Damian Lillard or Bradley Beal doesn't pop, and another guy of that caliber on the perimeter doesn't become available, then what do you do? Do you take another offer that's just a bunch of draft picks and stuff and try to make it basically a delayed sign and trade? Do you stick it out with Simmons, try to go through another playoffs with him, which I can't even imagine that. Can you imagine the crowd in Philadelphia for those home games in fourth quarters? But do you try to ride through another year of that and then deal with it next summer? Like, it's kind of a fascinating thing. But I feel like they have to do something by the trade deadline or they're punting this season, and you don't know how many seasons of prime Embiid you're getting.
So I don't know how much we disagree on this, but I think all of this, and Danny was making the point yesterday. He said Simmons' best way to get traded is to come back and play well so there's more demand for him. I take the opposite tack, because him coming back and playing well, that just validates Morey's ridiculously high asking price. I don't know that, and moreover, it also allows maintaining the status quo to be reasonable. I think after all this bullshit that they went through, you and I were like, oh yeah, they got to trade him. They can't start the season with him. Well, at least for right now, I think both sides of this are kind of, they're like the couple that broke up, did some other dating, and realized that as flawed as their previous relationship was, there wasn't much out there for them at the time. And so, like, Simmons' trade value wasn't that high. He thought his trade value probably be high enough. It'd be easy to get traded. That hasn't been the case. He thought there'd be a lot more demand for him probably than there was. The Sixers probably thought that by trading him, they would be able to get a lot more. They thought that guys would be available in the offseason, Beal and Lillard, who didn't end up becoming available as well. So I think Philly and all of the total bullshit, I should add, but the talking points of like, oh yeah, you know, they want to convince him that this is the place for him long term. They're still going to canvas for trades for him, but they want to convince him that this would be the place
for him long term. That's just window dressing for public consumption. Yeah.
However, Philly in some ways can get their cake and eat it too. I think for right now, just making it through the regular season, winning some games, being on the same pace that they were last year with basically the entire same team back, and making it to the trade deadline where, all right, if you get a good offer, you can trade him. If not, hey, all right, we'll be a top three seed in the East. And yeah, you know, we might lose in the playoffs, but fine. That's better than the alternative. If I'm Ben Simmons and his team, I don't want to give Philly that option. I want to say, I want to torpedo their season to the point where you're just going to suck this year if you keep me around. And so either you're going to pay me to leave or you're going to trade me. And I've now even tanked my trade value even more so that you're like, oh shit, it's only going to get worse. I better trade him now.
Yeah. Does he do the Andrew Bynum for an old Philadelphia memory?
injure yourself bowling?
No. There was a practice where he was just shooting every time he got the ball, no matter where he was on the court.
that's been posited as well, that yeah, he can torpedo the team by just shooting a three-pointer every time. That would give
if he tried to torpedo the practices by shooting threes.
So that would be my approach. Now, my thought on why that hasn't happened and why they didn't just go with the time-tested hold in is just that, like, Ben Simmons isn't built that way. He just, like, can't deal with any kind of conflict in person. Like, it seems he's just such a reticent guy that he can't do the even be as passive aggressive as James Harden was, not to mention what Jimmy Butler did as well.
Yeah. This is going to be a fascinating story now during the opening weeks of the season. What kind of Ben Simmons are they going to get? And then what does that do to his trade value? I mean, the one argument for him holding out is that if he held out and the Sixers sucked at the beginning of the season or, you know, lost a few games or whatever, it would A, create more panic for Philadelphia to make a deal, and B, theoretically raise his trade value by saying, look at them without Ben Simmons, they can't do anything. So that was probably the one advantage to a holdout. It was just going to be expensive for him.
Yeah, there's no reason to do it that way. I think they miscalculated. They honestly just fucked up the CBA in terms of thinking like, oh yeah, we got this $8 million payment coming, so we're not even going to have to face any withdrawal until November 15th because, for those who don't know, the structure of Simmons' contract, which Clutch likes to do a lot, the most you can get $8 million or you can get 25% of your salary right on July 1st or the beginning of the league year, and then you can get another 25% of your salary as an advance on October 1st. Only the best players have the leverage to get that type of a payment structure, but Simmons was one of them. And obviously, you know, to get the time value of the money earlier is just good. Basically only half of his contract is left to get paid over the course of the season on your usual 2-week pay structure. And so they were hoping that they wouldn't be able to get fined until the beginning of that, which is, it's not November 15th, but it's whatever the first pay period would have been, November 1st. But the problem was that they basically said they were going to breach the contract, and so Philly was totally within their rights to acknowledge that anticipatory breach and then withhold the payment and put it in escrow. And so I think they just didn't realize that Philly could do that. They would have been smart to just come in until October 1st, get the payment, and then leave. That would have been a better way to do it.
Yeah.
So all that said now, what's your thought on how this resolves?
I think he will still get traded this season. It'll be after December 15th when there are more players eligible to be traded. Perhaps after January 15th when a few more people come online. But I do still think he'll be traded.
Does that happen with Daryl getting what he wants? Or is Daryl going to finally acknowledge reality?
I think there's going to end up being an acknowledgement of reality somehow. I don't think he's going to end up with Lillard or Beal. So is there something else they can end up with and be happy with? That's That's the question here.
So to me, it depends on what Simmons does. If he comes back and he actually just plays hard, and maybe he's just so conflict averse that once he's in the situation again, that he just will have to play hard, or you know, maybe that some of that will just be like a screw you to all those who doubted him or whatever. The reaction of the Philly fans also will be very interesting. The reaction of the organization. You know, I don't know if Ben Simmons is built to be able to deal with being booed at home. And when's the last time we saw someone just get mercilessly booed at home for a long period? Like, I guess it was the Butler Thibodeau thing back in 2018, but that was only
does Markel Fultz count? I mean, they weren't quite as hard on him.
No, they tried to be supportive of him, supposedly.
Okay, so going in the way back machine. Okay, Markel Fultz's first preseason game was against us. Okay, yeah. And like the fans at courtside were already on him. Like by the second half, okay. Because, like, he'd shot a couple air balls, and Andrew Harrison was kicking his ass, and like, they were already letting him have it. It was unbelievable.
That's pretty solid. I my memory was, I think, once he came back, I think they were trying to be, like, more encouraging of him. Like, once they realized that there was really, like...
An issue. Yeah.
But in any event, I don't think, unless Joel Embiid comes out and it's like, hey, Ben is our brother, like, please don't boo him, and, you know, puts his arm around him as soon as the booing starts or whatever, like, I think that they're going to be pretty merciless. There's one other question I want to ask you, too, but, so I think if he comes out and plays well, my prediction, going along what my advice would be to him, is that he actually ends up playing the whole season there, and then maybe it gets revisited in the offseason if he plays well. I think if he plays poorly, he gets moved by the deadline, or if he ends up sitting out with left hamstring tightness for 25 games. It's tightness. It's not an actual strain or it's just tightness. Just
tendonitis.
Don't worry about it. So here's my last question for you. Who's at fault in all this? Is it the organization? Is it Ben Simmons? Like, if you're a Philly fan, who should you be mad at?
I would probably be a little more upset with Simmons, but I think like the organization kind of went too far, I thought, to cater to Simmons when it was clear that Embiid was the best player for like pretty early. But Simmons really brought this situation to a head with what happened in the playoffs last year against Atlanta. And if he doesn't shrink in game 7 especially, I could see how this could have had a different outcome. But it just put such an exclamation point on the idea that he and Embiid can't play together in big games. And then for him to exacerbate it with the holdout was a little weird, right? Because it was like, well, okay, actually like the team isn't screwing you, right? Like you're kind of holding back the team a little bit, as talented as you are. So I would put more of the blame on Simmons.
Yeah, I think from his perspective, if you just want to say Ben Simmons just is who he is as a player, I think fans should be upset with him for not growing his game and not getting potentially the psychological help that he needs, not acknowledging that there's a problem, not acknowledging that he needs to improve, not having gotten better. All of those things are for not living up to what I think his promise as a player has been. Certainly, I think that that's an issue. But the organization is the one that tried to move on from him first in the Harden thing. It was fait accompli.
That's a good point.
Yeah. It was fait accompli that they're going to try and trade him after the Game 7 thing. Obviously, there was a level of frustration with him. He certainly has rabbit ears in terms of how sensitive he is with some of the comments that were made in the media by Joel and Rivers, comments that happen to be more than a little true. So he is super sensitive. But to me, this trade request was just an attempt to try to take command of the process here. And I don't mind that at all. I don't mind him holding out. Like Doc Rivers yelling, it's in your contract. No, you like this morality of like you have to honor your contract. You know, the team can trade you. You do what you can to try to control your destination and control your fate, no matter how much you have left on your contract. I have much more of a real politic approach to that aspect. And so I think you should be mad at him for not being that good and having some very weird ideas about what he is as a player and all that stuff. But I think the organization kind of started this, and they were going to trade in the offseason. season, regardless of whether you requested a trade. He's just trying to take control of his fate a little bit more. So I wouldn't be mad at him for the holdout and the
let me ask you this though. If they were going to trade him anyway, how is he taking control of his fate with a holdout? Like he because he's in a position with no leverage, like he can't dictate where he's going to go when he has 4 years left on his deal.
I think what he's trying to do is fix it so he's not just waiting around to be traded at the organization's behest. What he was trying to do is get traded faster. Maybe they knew that there wasn't this Godfather offer out there. Like they,
right.
He doesn't want to just be waiting around until Damian Lillard decides that he wants to be somewhere else. Right. He doesn't, that's what I'm saying about his fit. He doesn't want to waste this whole season.
Okay. I can see the argument for that a little more. Like I'm going to start this ball rolling right in the beginning of summer so that I'm established on my next team when next year starts. I can respect the case for that a little more.
Yeah, and I think, you know, my guess would be originally that this started off as like, hey, look, we all know you're trying to trade him. Just do it. Do it this summer. Get it done. All right, you want to do some disagreements here? I sent you my list. You sent me yours. We got some pretty big disagreements here. Who do you want to start with?
I am having trouble finding the list, so you tell me who you want to start with.
Okay, well, let us begin with the aforementioned Milwaukee Bucks. I teased this earlier. You had the Bucks over under is like something like 53.5 or something, or at least it was when I did a little bit ago. I think they're going to go over. I had them at 54 wins. You got them at 62 wins. And you also, in our earlier discussion, you kind of teased this idea that, you know, they're going to be a really good playoff team. I think a lot of people are saying they're the second most likely team to win the championship. A lot of people are saying that the Bucks are and the Nets are in kind of their own tier of above everyone else, or that the Bucks are by themselves in the second tier. Why do you believe that, other than simply the Milwaukee Bucks won the championship last year?
Well, I mean, there is that, but they also won it without a pretty valuable player playing for them with DiVincenzo. I actually think PJ Tucker didn't really help them that much, and I think losing him is not that big a deal. I think adding George Hill to replace Jeff Teague, I think adding Grayson Allen to have another shooter off the bench, I think that will end up being a much more important thing for them. And I just think top to bottom, I mean, they're built to be really good in the regular season, like 1-9. Like, that is a good team. With obviously a superstar at the four, probably the best regular season player in the league in Giannis. And the Bucks are going to manage minutes and experiment with things, whatever, just like they did last year. But I think their defensive concept, especially in the regular season, is really good and just assures a certain level, high level of success. And I just don't see who else is pushing them for the best regular season record in the league.
Okay. So I disagree with nearly everything that you just said.
Okay.
I don't think DiVincenzo is that valuable. I think PJ Tucker is much more valuable to their defense in the playoffs
I might agree with you in the context of a Brooklyn series, but we're talking about regular season win totals here, right?
I'm extending this discussion to the playoffs as well. Remember, I mentioned that in terms of championship contention, that a lot of people are putting them in like an obvious second best team in the league, which I, in terms of championships, which I don't necessarily agree with.
Okay.
But in the play, I think in the regular season, PJ Tucker, not as important. But in the playoffs, I thought he was extremely important. A lot of people disagree with me on this, and I agree also that he hurt their offense compared to someone like DiVincenzo, who he replaced in the starting lineup when he went down. But Tucker allowed them to switch defensively, and I think he was important, obviously, in the Brooklyn series. He was the only guy who had a prayer of guarding KD one-on-one. And then he also, in that Hawks series, and then also in the Phoenix series, when they played Giannis at center, and against a lot of other teams that they're going to face, including, I think, the Brooklyn Nets to some degree as well, like being able to play Giannis at center and switch through all five positions. They only had one lineup basically that could do that, but they closed most of those games with that group and doing some switching. I think that's really big. Now, is Semi Ojeleye going to step in and do that? I don't think that Semi Ojeleye might be a slightly better shooter than PJ Tucker, but not much. And it's not nearly doesn't have nearly the intensity that Tucker does. So I think that's going to hurt their playoff defense and their versatility quite a bit. As far as the regular season, George Hill basically couldn't play at all for Philly in the playoffs last year. He's pretty old. Yes, I realize that Mike Budenholzer is the George Hill whisperer, so I expect him to be a little bit better than that. But also, he could get injured. He's not doesn't have the greatest health record. DiVincenzo, who knows when he's coming back and what kind of shape he's going to be in. Grayson Allen sucks on defense, although he's a solid shooter. Giannis, seems like he's going to play 60 games this year with some of this knee soreness, saying he's not even fully recovered from the knee injury that he suffered in the East Finals. Rodney Hood, Semi Ojeleye.
Hey, Jordan Nora. Not really. Jordan Nora's had a good preseason.
Okay. He might evolve a little bit. I can't say I've been too locked in on the Bucks preseason since they basically haven't been playing any of their main guys. So maybe he can contribute, although he's not going to help the defense. I think their regular season defense is not going to be that great. They're going to play plenty of minutes with Portis and no Lopez or Giannis, and they're going to get killed defensively in those minutes, as they did last year in those alignments. I think Portis now is one of the most overrated players in the NBA after these playoffs. And ultimately, I'm not buying what the Bucks did last year. Like, who is the great team that the Milwaukee Bucks beat in the playoffs last year? Phoenix is a very good team, and they were better than them. They played really well, but they didn't have any kind of a matchup for Giannis.
That was a good matchup. Now, that's where I do agree with you. Whoever ended up winning last year, I thought it was clear by the conference finals. Like, this was a year where somebody was slipping through a window of dominance, right? Where there wasn't that team, between the injuries that hit the Lakers and Brooklyn and Kawhi's ACL. Utah looked like they might have the best team in the regular season, and then they couldn't hold up and their guards got injured. So it was definitely that kind of year. But I look back even the 2 years before that, the Bucks had absolutely dominant regular seasons. I don't think they have the same formula though as they did
back then, because they don't have the ability. I think with when Giannis doesn't play, I think they're going to struggle to defend. And I think that they just don't have the same quality of defensive backups as they had to just be that. I mean, and remember, 2 years ago, they were 2 points per 100 possessions better than any other team in the league defensively. And I just don't think they have that level of depth. And they also won the championship, so they're not going to be going as hard, I think, either.
I do think we saw that last year with them. I'm interested to see how this plays out. I think they'll have the best record in the league, even without really trying that hard for it.
Yeah, I think I got the Jazz with that, actually. But I think, I had Brooklyn with that before the Kyrie situation emerged. But and I will completely crow again, if the Milwaukee Bucks dominate this season and they win another championship, or they get to the finals and have another really good playoffs, I will completely crow. But as I've gotten through all these team previews, just thinking about all these teams and just like what a complete bullshit playoffs it was last year in terms of injuries. Like that Hawks team that they beat, yeah, Giannis is out by the end, but the Hawks were missing their starting 1, 2, and 3, basically, at the same time. And like, Kawhi got injured, and you mentioned the Jazz injuries, and obviously Brooklyn. And so I'm not buying that Giannis has solved every single problem that he ever had, and that they solved their half-court offensive issues. No, they actually just didn't play anyone last year, and Giannis has not beaten a team that has a really good matchup for him. So I'm very interested to see where it goes. I do think they're the second best team in the East, but I kind of have them in the mix with some of the best teams in the West more than I have them above those teams.
Okay,
anything else to add there, or should we move on?
I think we both have Brooklyn beating Milwaukee in the conference finals, though.
Yeah, I think so. I definitely, a lot of these teams have question marks, though, which kind of makes this fun to try and predict. But what I love the most about NBA basketball is classic series between two great teams. And so that's this new era that we're in, where other than the Nets, there really aren't great teams coming into the season. That kind of does make me a little bit sad that, we're not going to see Golden State versus Cleveland level of matchups like we've seen at times. Miami Heat versus San Antonio Spurs. But maybe, some teams are going to emerge to be really good this year. Maybe we just don't know who they are.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, here's another one. This one amused me.
Okay.
You and I differ by 9 wins on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Okay. I took the under on the Thunder, and you are 9 wins lower than me nonetheless.
Yeah, that team is horrible. I mean, have you, even in the beginning of last year when they stumbled into some wins by accident, they had real players mixed in with the bad players and the rookies and stuff. you look at them now, I mean, it's Shea and it's like all bad players. Like, who's like, they're going to get killed.
Yeah. Shea is pretty good. I just had a lot of respect for what he can do. You know, who knows whether he says,
if they win 20 games, he needs to be on one of the three all NBA teams.
Lou Dort is a quality starter, I would say.
I will push back on that.
Yeah.
I think he's a very good individual defender. I think offensively he had to bite off way more than he could chew last year.
Well, he's definitely, you know, been Peter principled up a little bit in terms of his offensive role. But in terms of just, you know, being a player, any contender would love to have Lou Dort on their team and would probably start him, I think. That's kind of more what I was thinking. Like, he's a good player.
Okay.
Is my thought. But yeah, it's, you know, Darius Bazley, you know, Kendrick Williams is a decent bench piece for his role. Who knows how much he's even going to play? Favors is, you know, an okay backup center. Who knows how much he's going to play? I will disagree with you. You said in your preview that he's going to get traded. I actually don't think he gets traded because I guess the only way he gets traded is if they find a way to take on even worse money, because he still has that player option for next year. Like, nobody's going to trade for him as the starter, but maybe there's just some bad contract that OKC could take back who's even worse than him if he shows he can be effective. I'm not sure he will be effective.
Yeah, there's always bad money hanging out there. I mean, yeah, I guess maybe it could go to the summer, but man, that's a tough place to ride out a full year.
Al Horford did it, I guess, but his contract was a lot bigger. Yeah, and then you get into, like, Josh Giddey, I guess, is going to be their starting point guard, and I think he's going to be terrible this year. He showed a little more than I expected in preseason, but he can't shoot, can't defend, good passer, but, you know, I mean, he seems like he's going to be someone who's going to have, you know, 50% true shooting percentage or below, even if he is a good passer. Yeah, I guess it was just that Shea is pretty good. That's what I was saying. The 13 win seems low. I if I had to say whether they'll be over or under 22, I guess I might, especially having seen them in the preseason as well, I probably would lower my prediction down to maybe something like 20. But you really think, like, you got to be so bad to win less than 20 games, and maybe they are, but, you know, even some of those process Sixers teams, I would say they have more talent than those teams. Would you agree with that?
I was trying to go back and look at those teams and figure it out.
Because they at least have someone you can give the ball to who's going to – those Sixers teams had nobody.
Yeah, that was – I mean, I guess you had rookie of the year Michael Carter Williams, right? And that was kind of it.
Yeah, so 13 – I mean, 12 and 70 is what that worst Sixers team was, the 15-16 team where they gave up 2 second-round picks to acquire Ish Smith to not set the NBA all-time.
Oh, that's the other question with Oklahoma City. When does Adam Silver bring in the Colangelos?
God. Yeah, and then Jerry Colangelo can trade for Kevin Love immediately. That'll be interesting. It's only been 1 year of this, and they were competitive for half of last year. The difference between them and the process is they didn't even have many recent first-round picks on those teams because the guys that they drafted were injured, whereas at least OKC is bringing in players who could potentially be part of the future. Like, some of those process teams, it was like, all right, Robert Covington is our best player who you brought in at a minimum. That's who you should be most excited about, TJ McConnell. I think they'll be a little bit. 13 is just such a low number that I agree with you that they are going to be worse than last year. I think that's probably fair. Let's see here. We got time for maybe a couple more. The Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
You are pretty low on the Golden State Warriors. I know the preview hasn't come out yet, but you want to explain why that is?
Oh, no. The preview came out. Yeah.
It did. Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't see it yet. Sorry.
Yeah.
How many wins do you have them for?
I have them with 39.
Oh, baby. I got 47 on them.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I'm wrong about this. I mean, you know, Golden State, I think they started to figure things out toward the second half of last season. It still just feels like it's just all Steph and nothing else. I mean, the fact they were 20th in offense last year with Steph going bananas the whole year, it's like you just slap your forehead. Like, as soon as the ball left his hands, it was like, oh my goodness. Like, can anyone else on this team do anything? Now, they could get some scoring from some other places. Klay will probably be back. We don't know what kind of Klay we're getting, but probably half the season at least. Seems like a little more shooting if Otto Porter is healthy. Bielitsa, who for some reason Miami didn't want to play last year, I still think he's got something left in the tank to give. I thought that was a good signing. Jordan Poole certainly seems to be coming along nicely as like a sixth man type.
Yeah, one of the more surprising developments, because you and I both thought he was terrible.
So bad. Like the beginning of that season, which was completely off the rails from the word go 2 years ago in Golden State, like Poole was so bad. I would have been very shocked if you told me he was going to become like a high-level six-man scorer type in 2 years. I think the other thing you got to look at, I mean, the age of the two key players who carried them to what little success they had last year, right? Like, I don't know if they'll be worse this year, but you certainly aren't going to bet on them being better when you look at Steph and Draymond and their age.
So, yeah, I'm just in disagreement here. I did go under their over-under. I have them for 47.
What's their over-under?
47 and a half.
That's free
I think
money,
it's even
man.
48 and a half in some places.
Good God. No, I saw something that had them as like the fourth best championship odds, which is like, what are we even doing here? Did anyone watch last season?
Yeah, so a number of reasons why I'm in disagreement with you here. I think the biggest reason that I went under is just the potential for injuries. And, you know, if Draymond or Steph goes down, you know, that really limits them. They have no depth whatsoever in the front court at this point in terms of size. But, you know, Steph, I think he keeps himself in pretty good condition. I don't think he can quite duplicate last year, but he still is an amazing threat. When Draymond Green played center, which he's going to do 25 minutes a game this year, it seems like the plan. And he played with Steph. They had a 121 offensive rating. So much of their struggles were when he was off the court or when he was playing with Wiseman or Kelly Oubre, guys who just had no idea how to run their system. They've got a ton more passing this year, which is really important to what Steve Kerr is trying to do. And so that's huge. And then they have a ton more shooting as well. I mean, watching them get up 69 three-pointers, admittedly against a Blazers team that doesn't know their system yet, but the number of threes that they've been shooting has been really encouraging. They just have a lot of guys who are going to make shots on this team and can pass and run Steve Kerr's system. And, you know, I'm a big Poole believer now. And, you know, I mean, the way he's been bombing threes from 28 feet is really, really impressive. And you throw in, especially if Klay comes back, you're going to have Steph, Poole, and Klay, three guys out there who can come off of screens and shoot three-pointers from 28 feet. I mean, that's going to be really hard to guard. I think their defense might take a little bit of a step back from last year, but they're also, like, they're, as long as they're healthy, I wonder, with Draymond playing so much center and all this and pushing really hard for wins right at the start the way they have been, whether they're going to be able to maintain the level. But I think they're going to push really hard at the start of the season. And I think when everyone is healthy, I think they're going to be really good. I think they have a decent chance to be the third best team in the West when healthy.
Wow.
But it's just a question of the health for me.
Okay. I think they're going to end up in the play-in again. As our local operative in the Bay Area, how much of Moody and Kuminga do you think we see this year?
Will you be driving to Santa Cruz or Moody actually got a little bit of play with the starters up until yesterday, and Steph and Draymond didn't play, but up until yesterday, Moody hadn't played with any of the starters at all. He'd just been in mop-up time, and then Kuminga is out with this strained patellar tendon. Kuminga can't help them at all this year. Moody, maybe he could, because he's kind of got that more mature
It's interesting, because Kuminga is the higher pick with the higher upside, but if you're trying to win a game this year, Moody probably fits better, because he's more like that 3-and-D guy who can play off the ball a little more.
Yeah, and obviously James Wiseman missing camp was a big problem as well. I mean, he's going to play some. We'll see how that goes, but probably just
that's if he doesn't play, do I move him up in my projection or down?
Yeah. And Looney, again, like, I think it was kind of a miracle that he stayed as healthy as he did last year. So, you know, injuries to Draymond or Looney, that is going to be a problem for them. And I think their defense could take a big step back. But I think these guys would be nasty on offense, actually, particularly when Steph is on the floor. They just have too much shooting and passing and good decision making at this point in time. All right. We got time for one more here.
All right.
About 5 minutes left. And let's see here. We're in pretty close agreement on most of these. Here's one.
Okay.
You have the Charlotte Hornets for 29 wins, and I have 37.
Yeah, I thought they were kind of lucky to win as many games as they did last year. I think they, you know, going from Graham to Ish Smith is a step back. Yep. They don't really have a center, and they're trying to kind of rubber band and duct tape things.
Plumlee, you're gonna make that statement just so I'm forced to defend Mason Plumlee? Is that what you're doing?
This is the best setup I will have all year.
He's acceptable. It's certainly not a top tier starting center, but I think he could give them more than they got from that position with Bisnack Biyombo last year. Bisnack Biyombo played 1,300 minutes for these guys last year.
Yeah, it was Biyombo and Zeller can't stay on the court. The interesting thing, the thing that makes this Charlotte team interesting is that they experimented with these centerless lineups with PJ Washington as a pseudo five, basically. And they have the speed with Ball and Ish Smith to just jack up the tempo and play small and fast and try to beat teams that way. I don't know if it'll work or not, but I think it's going to be a fun experiment to watch depending on how often James Borrego goes to it. I think that makes them a really interesting team to watch this year. I don't expect them to be in the playoff race the way they were a year ago. I think this is a step back year before they step up. They have a lot, like the back end of the roster is kind of all these kind of young guys they're trying to bring in and move up. I don't know how well that's going to go. You know, you're trying to get minutes for like Book Knight and Kai Jones, you know, your backup centers, if you choose to play one, or Vernon Carey or Nick Richards there's a lot of question marks when you get into the second tier. I don't know if Terry Rozier is going to be as good as he was last year. I certainly question that extension. So I think even with the wind at their back in terms of Ball going into his second year, I still think there's a lot of questions with that team, and that this year might be a little bit of a step back before they can take another step forward.
Yeah, they do have a bunch of young guys who you hope will get better. LaMelo obviously is one of those. Rozier is at least at an age where, you know, he did shoot the lights out. He's not going to have the same clutch performance. They had the point differential, I think, of like a 34-win team last year, so a little bit lower than what their record would have indicated. So you do have to come up with them being three wins better and qualitatively than they were a year ago. But guys like Washington, Miles Bridges, I mean, those guys are young enough to get better. And so I think that's part of it. I agree with you on the depth. I think their top eight, top nine is actually pretty solid in terms of like that sort of depth. But you don't have your top eight and top nine available every single game. And then it gets pretty ugly from there. I agree with you on that. And there are going to be some of these entitlement minutes for the likes of Book Knight and Kai Jones, obviously. But, you know, I think Kelly Oubre is a good signing for them just because they want to play fast. Yeah. He'll give them some defensive versatility.
Play him at the four and Washington at the five and just try to go fast as hell. Yeah, I see the fit there.
And if you told me that Gordon Hayward were going to be healthy all year, then I would have them probably around a 500 team, maybe slightly better than that. I think part of my reason, I went under on them at 37 wins.
Yeah.
So you are like way, way under.
Yeah. The counterpoint to my prediction would be that they were 24-20, I think, when Hayward played last year.
Yeah.
But the counterpoint to that counterpoint is I don't know if you can just count on Gordon Hayward to play a bunch of games at this point.
No, and he's still a very important piece for them. And there's also the possibility of LaMelo just being a lot better this year. That's a possibility.
That's the biggest one. Yeah.
And he, don't forget, I mean, he basically missed the last 2 months of the season when you throw in that he wasn't himself when he got back from that wrist issue as well. So I don't know what to think of these guys, but I do think they'll be kind of in the play-in.
Yes. I don't. I'm down on them. I do think they are about the most interesting team that nobody really talks about.
Yeah, and for the long-term future of the franchise, these next 2 years, is LaMelo going to evolve into like a real superstar? He had made a great start last year, but still, you got the big leap that he took last year. He's got to do that again still to still be on that superstar path.
Yeah,
I'm a believer, though, because of just the way that he seems to pick things up so quickly. It seemed like last year he was adding some new facet to his game every week, basically, whether it was drawing more fouls or his isolation play, where getting to the basket and finishing a little bit better, new passes. So my bigger concern is just that their defense. I think they're kind of like slightly below average on offense and, you know, like 21st or 22nd on defense. Borrego does a pretty good job scotch taping it together on D.
Yeah, and that's definitely what they're doing on defense. So that's going to be interesting if they can still hold it together. They got super lucky on opponent free throws last year too, which you don't expect to continue.
I do love that you're like the only person who talks about that in projections, which is the free throw defense,
man.
How do you know they're not just following the right people?
Hey, I just got to say, I mean, my Washington football team, our kicker defense has been the key to both victories.
The Washington football team. That's how we do it. The Washington football team that's such a shit show that they're getting people in other organizations.
That's when you really know you've arrived as a shit show organization.
Yeah, someday we'll have to talk about how you became a fan of them growing up in New Jersey. But we'll save that for another time. For programming, we're back now, obviously. We're going to be recording on Wednesdays. We're still working to see if we're going to do some sort of a live element again like we did last year with questions. So stay posted on that by following us on Twitter. Obviously, we'll tell you about it here on the pod as well. But it should be every Wednesday here for the foreseeable future. And we hope that you will tune in every week. We'll talk to you all next week.